Hint, mouth-watering water.
WMNF's Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. We're also streaming live right now on Facebook.com/WMNF News. I'm Sean Canaan. Today we're going to look at transportation issues in the Tampa Bay area, specifically about whether lanes will be added to I-275 north of downtown Tampa. We'll hear from a critic of the interstate lane expansion as well as from the Florida Department of Transportation, and we'll take your calls. I'll give out the number later in the show. But tomorrow at 6 in the evening, the Hillsborough County Metropolitan Planning Organization's board will meet to vote on transportation priorities. It will consider plans for expanding the number of lanes and overpasses where I-4 and I-275 meet near downtown Tampa. And the MPO will consider adding lanes to I-275 from downtown north to Bierce Avenue. And joining us now in the studio is the local Florida Department of Transportation Secretary David Gwynn. Welcome to WMNF, David.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate you coming in. Thanks so much. Well, let's begin with, for people who are not familiar with the concept called Tampa Bay Next, give us an idea of the scope of what you have planned.
Okay, well, several years ago, there was a program or a project actually called Tampa Bay Express. And based on a lot of input from the community, we reevaluated that, and we decided that that wasn't the right answer for the Tampa Bay region. So out of that became Tampa Bay Next, which was really more of a process to look at not just interstate projects, but to look at things like transit, safety improvements, improvements outside of what the Tampa Bay Express project was going to address. And so now we have several projects that are either underway or about to get underway. We have the Gateway Express project in Pinellas County that provides a limited access facility to connect the airport and the Bayside Bridge to a roadway which would connect US 19 and 275, an area now that does not have a limited access connection. In October, we should be awarding a contract for the reconstruction of the Howard Franklin Bridge, which is about an $800 million project to replace the bridge that is currently structurally deficient that was built in the 1950s with a new bridge that will allow for four lanes in each direction as well as two express lanes in each direction along with a pedestrian bicycle facility adjacent to it. The next project that we'll have after that is express lanes from the Gateway Project south to the city of St. Pete to the 375 exit. And then the one project that has the most support from the community right now is the West Shore Interchange, which is about a $1.3 billion project that would tie in the airport, the Howard Franklin Bridge, the Courtney Campbell, the veterans, everything that's going on down in that area together with a modern interchange.
So the projects you've talked about so far stretch from St. Petersburg to almost to downtown Tampa.
Correct.
And we'll get more later in the show. We'll talk a lot more about downtown Tampa and north from there. But before we go too far, I just want to let people know, when you say replace the Howard Franklin Bridge, you're talking about one of the spans, the older of the two spans that crosses. One will stay the same. The newer one will stay the same, but you're going to replace the older one with a brand new bridge.
Correct. Correct. That is correct.
All right, so what might happen in West Shore? What does the West Shore interchange look like when it's all built out?
Well, right now, the existing West Shore interchange is pretty similar to what was built back in the 60s. It's not been improved all that much, and so it's severely over capacity. What this new interchange would provide is would tie in express lanes that currently exist on the Veterans and that will exist on the Howard Franklin to a network that would bring you to and from the Veterans and 275. There is not a decision made yet whether those express lanes would continue to travel east towards the downtown interchange, but it also would just provide a lot more capacity, and it also would open up connections underneath 275, which were severed when the interstate was originally constructed at Trask, Rio, and Occident, just providing more opportunities for traffic to get underneath the interstate and for pedestrians, bicycles, transit, other types of users to be able to get across 275 without having to go to the just couple of places that exist today.
And when you say express lanes, what you're talking about is lanes that are segregated. Maybe there's cones or maybe there's a hard physical barrier, and a car can choose to get into that lane and pay a toll, and usually it would be a variable toll on these interstates. That's what an express lane is, right?
Correct. And express lanes, some people think we put express lanes in for the revenue generation, and that's not the fact at all. In fact, we'll use the revenue that we generate for things like helping to fund express buses and so forth, because we're trying to improve mobility. We know we'll never be able to build enough lanes to completely solve congestion. But this provides a corridor, a reasonable travel time corridor and a reliable travel time corridor within the congested environment during the peak periods. It also provides a reliable express transit corridor, so that hopefully if folks don't want to sit in the congestion and they don't want to pay to ride in that lane, they'll be willing to take a transit vehicle that can ride in those lanes for free.
Our guest is David Gwynn with the Florida Department of Transportation local office here in the Tampa Bay area, and you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. It's 12:11 in the afternoon. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. We're talking about possible changes coming to the interstate highway system here in the St. Pete and Tampa area. And you mentioned that part of the project, part of Tampa Bay Next, is transit. And so far, what we've mostly been talking about are roads and bridges. What about transit? Give me some ideas.
So we're going to need to pick on every tool in our toolbox if we're going to accommodate the 250 to 300 people a day that are moving to the Tampa Bay region. The traffic that's out there today is just going to continue to grow. And so we need to look at transit. We need to look at roads. We need to look at it all. And it's not an either or. It should be an and. We should look at road improvements and transit. And so some of the transit things that we're currently focused on, until the tax was passed, there really wasn't much local money. So the DOT was providing most of the transit study money. We are currently studying a bus rapid transit system from the USF down to downtown, primarily using Fowler and Florida Tampa route. We're also providing a study, paying for a study to look at a regional premium transit study that would tie St. Pete, Pasco County, and Hillsborough County all together. Could be using the interstate system. We have some dedicated right-of-way we could put into for that. We also recently, in order to try to increase the ability to get federal funding for the downtown streetcar modernization and extension that the city of Tampa has put into the federal process, we gave a grant to the city and to HART to make it free for 3 years. It's been highly successful. It's tripled the ridership. That should make a strong case to the federal government that that's a good transit project to send money to.
So maybe an expansion of the length of the streetcar system?
Correct. They're studying that to look to perhaps to go up into the heights, to go and basically providing more opportunities for, and also to provide new, more modernized streetcars that would be more nimble and perhaps better in that environment.
You talked about the tax that was recently passed by Hillsborough. Last November, Hillsborough County residents voted to have a surcharge on their sales tax. So instead of, I think, 7 cents, they'll be paying 8 cents per dollar on sales tax. And that one penny will go toward transportation. That means that there's a local pool of transportation funds. For example, I'm just going to throw out this example of a transit project that might happen in the next few years. Let's say the county decides to buy CSX tracks in order to put some sort of rail, some sort of passenger rail on the CSX tracks. Would the FDOT then be able to help financially with that now that there is this local source of money from the county?
Correct. If say Hillsborough County or HART or the city of Tampa, if somebody was to take a project and develop a project, whether it be a light rail project, a commuter rail project, and enter into the federal process, then we can become a funding partner. And the goal would be to try to get 50% federal money, because we want to get as much federal money as we can. We've gotten very little of the federal money in the past, if hardly any. And then the state could step in as a 25% partner, and the local government would provide 25%. So the 25, 25, 50. In the past, without the tax, we didn't really have anything to match. And we can't create the money without a match. And so having that matching money is big. It should be able to draw state and federal money for whether it be a rail project, a bus rapid transit project. There's lots of opportunities.
So you are open to potentially helping to fund rail in the community?
We're open to looking at that. What we're not, what we've told people we don't do at this point is just go and talk, say, to CSX about a hypothetical project that we don't know exactly what we want. But as soon as we know what type of rail, who's going to fund it, the things that we need to have in order so that we can go to them and talk in a more leveraged manner, we're sure willing to do that. But we're not at that point yet, or at least nobody's brought that to us yet.
Our guest is David Gwynn with the Florida Department of Transportation. He's the secretary of the local office here. My name is Sean Canaan, and you're listening to You're listening to WMNF Tampa 88.5 FM. It's 12:16 in the afternoon, and I wanted to ask you, David, about this survey that I read about. That I think it was put out by the Tampa Bay Partnership. That 80% of Hillsborough residents surveyed support adding more lanes from MLK to Bierce Avenue, and this is one of the topics that will be on the MPO's calendar tomorrow on their tip list. Adding more lanes to the interstate, 80% of residents support that.
Yeah, I be honest with you, that was a survey done by other parties. I don't know how the survey, but I saw the results. You know, it's a controversial project. We have tried to find things we can do within our existing right-of-way to not have to buy more right-of-way. We do have right-of-way in that corridor to add a general purpose lane in each direction. We previously, in the previous tip, or the current tip, actually, until tomorrow, there is express lanes is what's the approved plan. We've asked the MPO to take out the express lanes, and we'll just use general purpose lanes and also provide a wider shoulder that can be used by HART buses or some future premium transit for regional transit, something like that, and put noise walls in along the whole corridor. I know there's some folks that don't like that. We're also going to make some improvements at various interchanges because there are several interchanges, including Hillsborough, that are bottlenecks right now that cause a lot of turbulence. But the other thing that we're asking to go along with that, and they have to kind of work together, is to provide some operational improvements at the downtown interchange. The options A, B, C, and D that we showed in the workshops, we have asked the MPO to remove that from the LRTP, and we're not pursuing any funding for it. And so what we've said is, since we're not looking at doing anything in that area right now as a long-term improvement, let's try to fix some of the bottlenecks and the real congested problems that result in over 1,500 crashes a year. A good example is the southbound 275 to go onto I-4. It's a mess. You get two lanes at many times trying to merge over, and until you get past MLK, you can't even get in the right lane. This segment 7, or the extra lane going north, would allow us to bring that lane all the way back up past Hillsborough to Sly, perhaps, and allow people to get in the right lane while they're going down to the I-4. Add a second lane, bring that around, clean up some of the ramps in 14th, 15th, and 21st, 22nd. We would allow all the access that's at 21st, 22nd today would remain. We'd be enhancing access at 14th, 15th. And so it's just getting the movement separated so not everybody's trying to move around to the different lanes at the same time. We can do all of that almost entirely within our existing right-of-way. Are the other alternatives, we needed anywhere from 50 to 200 new parcels. In this case, we might need 5 or 6, and most of them are, for instance, on a block where we own the whole block except maybe 1 or 2 parcels. And so I know there's people who really are against this, and I understand what they're saying. I understand they feel this is a road in their neighborhood. But we know that we just can't ignore the 1,500 crashes a year. We can't ignore that we've got 300 new residents in the region, and not all of them are going to want to go on transit. I don't ascribe to the theory that we got to make it more painful for people to drive so that they might want to go on to transit. I think we got to do our best to improve transit. And it doesn't need to be either or. We can do both. And the money that we're asking to pursue for the interstate system cannot be used for transit. It cannot be used for on-surface street improvements. It's strategic intermodal system money that's going to be going somewhere in the state. And if we don't take it, it's going to go to Orlando or Miami or somewhere else. It's not money we can just say put that on a transit project.
And I'm going to recap a couple of the things you just said, because you know, some of it is language that that we're used to hearing, but maybe the general public might not know what that is. Your right of way is how much space you need on either side of the interstate in this case, and parcels are homes and land that people own. And so what you're saying is that in the old project, the TBX, there were maybe dozens of people's homes that you would have had to have bought out. And now you're saying that maybe 5 or 6 people, you would still need to buy out their homes and have them move out, and they would get paid for these homes, but they would not really have a choice because of eminent domain.
We would work with them. You know, one thing that people don't realize is we never had one property that we own, a lot of property around the downtown interchange. Not one was condemned. Every one of them was a willing seller that wanted to sell us their property. If we found that these folks wanted to sell us our property, their property, then we would. If not, we're still going to look for ways to avoid those. We're constantly, this is not, and we're not even asking the MPO to approve funding. All we're doing is saying, put it on your priority list so that I can go to Tallahassee and say, hey, we want to be in the queue for some funding because we think this is a project that's worthwhile.
One other thing I wanted to ask you about that you just were mentioning is you were talking about some public meetings that just happened. One was in Ybor City and one was in West Shore, I think. And so going to the thinking about the Ybor City one, which was about the downtown interchange, you said that there were projects A, B, C, and D.
Yes.
And that, but now they're off the table. This is only a couple weeks later. I'm not really sure what you meant.
No, we are in the supplemental environmental impact study process, and we'll finish that up next year. We're going to go to public hearing probably in January. We are forced to, by the Federal Highway Administration, to select a preferred alternative that will come out of this process. What we're saying is we are going to pursue funding for West Shore. We are not going to pursue funding for the downtown interchange. So any of those four alternatives, or the no build, which could also be the selected no further action, we're not going to pursue any funding. We have no plans in any time soon to say, let's try to find funding to build one of these big footprint interchange improvements. That's why we're bringing in the operational improvements as a replacement, saying, take that out of your long-range transportation plan. Put this smaller project in. Let us at least address the 1,500 crashes. Let us at least try to clean up some of the turbulent points in there that are causing all these problems within the existing right-of-way, and to try to solve these problems with a minimal impact to the community.
In the same region that we're talking about, the same area of road, there's been some talk about that people support this idea of what's called Boulevard Tampa. And
correct,
that's I-275 from the downtown interchange north to maybe to Fowler, I think, or Fletcher, something like that, destroy the existing freeway and put it at grade and make it like a boulevard. What's FDOT's position on Boulevard Tampa?
So what we've told, MPO asked us if we had any opposition to them doing a study, and we told them, no, if you want to go ahead and do a study, that's perfectly fine. We did encourage them to get the stakeholders involved that really need to be involved, and the biggest one is the Federal Highway Administration. That's their road. They invested a lot of money, and it's part of the interstate highway system. And so what the study would have to do is convince them that there are other ways to move freight, to move people through this corridor, and how would that be done? And so we don't have a problem with that, but I will say that that's a longer-term project. That's going to take a long time to figure out, are you going to mitigate it by widening Florida or widening another roadway in the area or building a new road? Or how are you going to get all that traffic? Because that's what they're going to be concerned about. You can't just shut down a road that carries close to 200,000 vehicles a day, replace it with one that carries about a quarter of that, and not explain what will happen to the rest of the traffic. But it's not to say it's impossible. It's just it's going to take a long time to figure out how to do that. So we don't want to wait in the meantime and not do anything to try and make the road operate better and safer.
I think if people are interested in these types of discussions, they'll be showing up tomorrow night at the MPO meeting maybe to voice their opinion about what projects should be prioritized in the area. But what about Florida Department of Transportation? You've been holding workshops. Do you have any coming up where people can find out more about what's planned or have input on it?
Yeah, and we continue to have meetings in the community. Probably fairly soon we'll be going out, if the MPO is prioritizing the operational improvements, to go out and show in great detail exactly what these operational improvements are, what they will be and what they won't be, how the access will be changed. That will be coming up. We also will be having, as I mentioned in January, having a public hearing. But up to that point, we'll still continue to have a series of public meetings. I think in the last 2 years, we've had 180 meetings that we've done with the public. Not all of them are big public meetings. A lot of them are like one we did this morning with a pastor's group in Tampa. We try to get out and meet with anybody who wants to talk to us about it, even if it's a small group or a big group.
The public hearing in January, what will that be?
That is where we will put out what the recommended alternative is for the SEIS. And so it'll say, what is at West Shore and what is at Downtown Interchange? What are we going to put in the document that'll be submitted to Federal Highway for their approval?
Well, our guest is David Gwynn with the Florida Department of Transportation, and you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. We do have a couple of people on the line, if we can take a call or two. So, John, in Port Richey, you've been hanging on for a long time. What would you like to ask David Gwynn from the FDOT?
Well, thanks a lot, and I really like the idea of incorporating rail, light rail, get some of the cars off the road. But you mentioned that boulevard idea, which I'm really confused about that, because if you take 275 and then condense it down to a boulevard, wouldn't there be a bottleneck in there? I don't quite understand how that would work. And also, if you're planning on expanding 275, then that would need more traffic going that way, which to me just seems like there'd be more of a bottleneck. So I don't quite understand that whole boulevard concept. I don't know if that's really a question for your guest, but maybe they can answer that.
Well, John, I'll let David say what he wants to say in a second, but I should also let you know that I think my next guest will be a supporter of Boulevard Tampa, and we'll definitely talk about that. So,
All right, ask him that question for me, because I just don't quite understand how that would work if you're taking 275, people doing 70 miles an hour, and then bring them down to a boulevard, which they're going to be doing 30, 40 miles an hour.
Right, thank you.
No, I would just say, and that's exactly, I think, the question that the Federal Highway Administration would ask, and that's why I said it's probably important to get them involved early, so you know what they're going to ask you and what they will ask you to explain in your study, so you don't get a study done, show it to them, and then you have to go out and do another study. So,
all right, thanks so much for that call, John. Let's take one last call from Chip in Tampa. Last call for now, I should say. We'll take more calls later in the show, but Chip, what would you like to say?
Well, one quick thought on reducing crashes. It seems to me that speeding, reckless driving, and all the unnecessary risks people take are probably a major cause of crashes, and clamping down on that would go a long way. My question is, you know, our transportation system goes nowhere without inexpensive oil. And do the planners at DOT pay attention to medium, long-term trends in the oil market? Because from what I can tell from people who study these markets, it's not looking very good. Discoveries are way down. Inflation is down. Costs are rapidly rising. And it seems to me, if you connect the dots, the idea that people are going to be driving themselves around 10 years from now, 15 years from now, the way we've been accustomed to, that's just not going to happen.
All right, Chip, thanks for the question. I'm going to cut you off because you're coming in and out, but I think we got the gist of the question.
Yeah.
How would you respond?
Well, I can't say we look necessarily at variations in oil price, but I can tell you one thing we do look at, and it's something that we're concerned about, is we are seeing, we are projecting reduced gas tax revenues, because we're going to see, I think, a lot of changes maybe towards electric vehicles, vehicles that are powered other than just your gas tax revenue. And so that's something that that the state and federal government's going to have to consider in the future, is are we going to see falling revenues because of the change to electric vehicles? And we'll just have to figure out whether we need to plan accordingly or whether there's other revenue sources that need to be looked at to fill that gap. But in that regards, I say that's maybe how we're looking at the energy, but not so much whether we think it's going to be a huge increase in price or reduction in supply.
What would be some other revenues that you might pursue?
You hear a lot of different things. Of course, if a vehicle is being powered by electric, it's getting energy from something. So perhaps it's taxing the batteries or taxing something that an electric vehicle would use. I don't think they've solved that puzzle yet. There's always other sources of revenue that could be looked at, but I think we're still in the infancy of that, because we just recently adjusted our revenue projections for maybe 4 or 5 years out to say we think they might be a little bit lower, and we'll have to look for how to monitor and see how that goes.
All right, do you have time for one more email question?
Sure.
All right. Well, let me read this email. It comes in from Christopher. He says, can you ask Mr. Gwynn why a $31 million contract was recently awarded for interstate work on I-275 from east of the Howard Franklin Bridge to east of Lois Avenue in Tampa? Despite this, work is still under federal environmental review and no record of decision has been made. What can you tell us about that segment?
Okay. He must be talking about what we call the punch-through project. What that is if you ever drive from Pinellas County across Howard Franklin Bridge, when you get to State Road 60, you go down to two lanes. So you go from four lanes down to two lanes. And in the other directions, you have a similar situation where you get down to two lanes in each direction. We found a way to be able to widen underneath the existing bridges and to widen a few of the bridges, again, all within our existing right-of-way, where we can provide three lanes in each direction. So a 50% increase in capacity. We did get approval from the federal government to do that while the SEIS is underway, because it's not going to predetermine the outcome, which is something that they look for. So we got all the federal approvals. This will be done within a year, and we'll see a huge benefit, I think, we're also going to, if you ever come from the airport and you take that loop ramp that brings you to go northbound on 275, it ends really quick, and there's a big merge point there that backs the traffic all the way back up towards the airport. We're extending those bridges and those lanes out for almost a mile towards Dale Mabry to give more room to move over. So this is an interim improvement until we can get any major improvements in the West Shore Interchange built.
Well, thanks so much for joining me on WMNS Midpoint today, David.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much. David Gwynn is Secretary of the local Florida Department of Transportation, or FDOT, and he's joining us on Midpoint Monday. We'll be right back after this short music break with our next guest, and they're from Sunshine Citizens. We hope you stay with us on 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. Welcome back to 88.5 FM WMNF's Midpoint Monday. Our next guest is actually a critic of the widening of I-275 that we've been talking about this hour. Michelle Cookson is with Sunshine Citizens. I want to welcome her back to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. Welcome back to Midpoint Monday, Michelle.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. What is Sunshine Citizens?
Sunshine Citizens is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization that was founded to advocate for transit solutions, walkable, inclusive communities, and smart growth. We're a large coalition of many organizations, and we are also committed to holding elected officials accountable to their constituents and our Sunshine State laws. And that would be having our government, you know, accountable to transparent planning processes and costs.
Right now, we're talking about an MPO meeting that happens tomorrow night. First of all, what is the MPO, and what's this meeting that's tomorrow night?
Sure. MPO stands for our Metropolitan Planning Organization, and this is part of our county government. They are responsible for all of our transportation needs across the county. So these planners look at all of our needs, whether those are traffic lights, intersections, and hopefully more transit. That's what we've been advocating for, is to see more of those kinds of projects brought forward as a priority. So what's happening tomorrow night, Tuesday, June 11th at 6 p.m., there is an annual meeting that their board, so there's a governing board of the MPO, where they look at something called the TIP. I know you talked about it in the first half of the interview, but for listeners just tuning in, That's called the Transportation Improvement Plan. What happens with funding for these projects is there's a certain process and cycle, and every 5 years there's a work program, but every fiscal year, in terms of how the government can fund it, there's a list of projects, again, all over the county, and they are put in a certain priority order. And there are some items that were inserted into this tip last minute ahead of this meeting that are causing a lot of concern for many people in the community.
And we'll talk about that during this show, of course. Well, let's start with the recent meetings. There was one in Ybor, one in West Shore. We'll talk about the Ybor meeting, and that there were several different options for the downtown interchange that I'm learning for the first time might not necessarily be exactly what the FDOT has in mind for what's going to be going forward immediately. I don't know if you heard that part of our conversation. So there were options for A, B, C, and D that were laid out at this meeting, different potential plans for the downtown interchange. And my last guest, David Gwynn with the Florida Department of Transportation, said instead of asking, you know, finding out about funding for those, they're going to do a kind of a short-term fix of using essentially the existing footprint of the downtown interchange or Malfunction Junction and just add a lane from southbound 275 to I-4, go from one lane to two lanes there, and some other improvements within the existing footprint rather than these massive changes.
Okay, well, we're actually talking about two different things, and it's tough because it's complex, and that's understandable. I mean, transportation planning is very involved. I'm going to set aside the first part of your question. Just want to address the second half. I understand how the new items that have been inserted into the TIP are defined. However, what keeps being blown right by and not being brought forward, and I think the public needs to understand, is all of this work is a pattern we have seen before, and it keeps producing the same failing outcomes. So before we talk about this lane or that lane, all of which is lane addition, adding lanes, is just perpetuating the same failing cycle. And that's due to something called induced demand. Traffic engineers know this. This is a proven fact. And when pressed, they will admit you cannot widen your way out of congestion. You will not solve the situation you've created by saying, I'm going to add more lanes. And that's what induced demand does. It creates a situation for, understandably, drivers, especially in our area when people don't even have any other choice. They've never been presented with anything but car-only travel. So when you add lanes, you know, it just attracts more cars into those lanes. Then you look up and shortly those lanes are clogged again. And most everyone says, my God, I can't stand this congestion. Add another lane. Eventually, you're going to run out of real estate for those lanes. And the bigger point is you're just reinforcing a negative outcome. It's a bad, and especially true with interstates, it's a negative feedback loop. And we are at that point where we're saying consistently for 4 years, the community has turned out in majority saying we don't want this. We told you what we wanted last November when we voted to tax ourselves because we got tired of not seeing anything happen. And we said we are willing to invest. But when we take these investments, 45% of it must be invested in transit. And the other percentages, we want to see all of the other roads around this county fixed first. They're dangerous, incredibly dangerous. I'd be happy to provide, and you can link it at your website, the crash data for what's happening on all the other non-interstate roads in our county.
And so how does this, you said that I had, the first part that you were going to not address, is it worth addressing or should we just
I don't want to confuse
on?
It. I'm happy to.
Okay. Well, I think it might clear up confusion because obviously I'm connecting the two in my head. So if you could separate them.
Well, I think when I say there's two different conversations going on, I guess that's what I'm trying to stress. We have an existing, and I believe I did hear some of that on air, mentioned about how we have this entire process where interstates are concerned under a PD&E. This is what we're talking about when we say this interstate
project development and
acronyms. And I'm not even gonna remember now, sorry. I'll try. Well, there is one called the SEIS. That's the Secondary Environmental Impact Study. All of this process is required with something as big and impactful as interstates. And part of what's being studied is still from this 1996 plan, the last time it was looked at. So going through that process, we have arrived at for these particular project segments, meaning the downtown interchange and I-275 north out of it to Bears, a point in that process. Well, I thought I heard David mention that, but we should arrive at what is the quote alternative or what's the next option. That's where you saw plan A, B, C, and D. there is always a requirement to have a no build, no further action option. On March 26, at least 300 people who are directly impacted by the interstate turned out to a public hearing to state that was predominantly overwhelmingly their preference. So I think that differentiation is about tomorrow night. There is a hearing that looks at a plan that says for the next fiscal year, these are the priorities. And we are saying once again, why is the interstate always vaulted ahead of anything else? There's a lot of need and a lot of other priorities. We're asking the MPO to vote to remove line items 27 and 28 because we don't feel it's the top priority at this point in time. We ought to be allowed to go through that other process we're talking about with all the alphabet soup, where we come to a final decision that is submitted to the feds and says, this is what the community has said about this portion of the road.
In line items 27 and 28, the ones you were talking about, that has to do with the downtown interchange and expanding the number of lanes north from the interchange to Beers.
Correct.
Our guest is Michelle Cookson. She's with Sunshine Citizen. And if you'd like to call in, we'll take calls shortly. 813-239-9663 is the number to call in. You can also email dj@wmnf.org. I'll try to get to your emails as well. My name is Sean Canaan. It's 12:41 in the afternoon. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. We're also streaming live on facebook.com/WMNF News. So if you want to watch it on Facebook Live or share it with people out of town, feel free. You know, one thing I was talking about with David Gwynn from the FDOT just a minute ago is the state's lack of funding so far for transit projects, things like trains. And he said that because Hillsborough County residents passed a sales tax surcharge for transportation, now there's a local partner that the state can partner with and try to get matching federal funding. So essentially, for every $1 million that the county puts up, the state might be able to put up $1 million to try to get $2 million from the federal government. So are you optimistic now that that's passed and the FDOT sounds like it's on board, that there might be some real serious, sometimes expensive transit possibilities now that Hillsborough County has passed this transportation surtax?
Oh, absolutely. We're incredibly optimistic. I mean, this is what the grassroots has helped bring about. You know, 4 years of hard work has gotten this conversation moved to where it should have been all along. And that's why we're continuing to say, you know, keep committed to that, because as you can see, this process tends to be reluctant to move along. But the people have spoken there, and I welcome that partnering with FDOT. They've always said that to us, and we welcome that. We want to work with them and partner on these larger visionary projects that are going to really move the needle for this area. And I would point that out to the business community or certain interests in it that have been attacking the citizens lately. That's what we've been trying to have happen here all along. You know, you can't keep perpetuating the same 1960s model of interstate widening and say that in any way benefits economic growth. It's so false. You know, when you want to see real transformative growth, cities around this country are not drawing good employers with better wages. They're not drawing talent and innovation and drawing down venture capital because they're touting a 24-lane monster highway. It is around transformative transit projects that are part of a connected network that bring better quality of life, that draw talent, keep talent, and make things better for people here. I mean, I'm not sure it got mentioned earlier, but one of the most important things about, again, we cannot continue to add lanes. We cannot continue to induce demand because of the very real impacts to the environment, to people, to human beings. We have F-rated quality in terms of the air around the interstate corridor. It is already impacting and harming people. It's harming their homes. It's harming their quality of life. It is impacting their health, asthma, those with compromised immune systems, the elderly population, people who are already transportation disadvantaged. There's so many people already have a deep need for better transportation options. And this loop of just, we need to add lanes and we need to widen this. Again, I can't stress that enough. It's just the definition of insanity, right? You're doing the same thing over and over again and expecting some kind of different outcome. This is the moment where we stop that. So to your earlier question, we would love to see FDOT, at minimum, they should commit dollar for dollar matching every AFT or the transportation tax dollar that we raise. Yeah. And partner with us on those transit projects and make them be the priority first.
Our guest is Michelle Cookson with Sunshine Citizens, and we're talking about the idea that some parts of I-275 might be expanded, might be widened. And you mentioned just a minute ago, Michelle, about business groups and being critical of your group and other people who don't want the widening. And they point to a survey that they did. And when I say they, I think I'm talking about the Tampa Bay Partnership.
That's who paid for it.
Did a survey, and they said that 80% of Hillsborough residents surveyed support adding more lanes from MLK to Bierce. So now I'm hearing two different stories. This survey says 80% of Hillsborough residents. You're saying that at a meeting, 300 people came out and almost all of them said no build. So what's the real story here?
Well, thank you for asking. It's good to set the record straight. So this survey was a paid product, and it's important for listeners to understand when you quote out 80% of something that the total respondents were 400 people. So again, there's thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people in Hillsborough County that, as I mentioned earlier, approved the Alford Transportation Tax because they're fed up. And I would invite the partnership and other people to go ahead and look at the precinct map that shows how distributed that voting support was all around the county. There seems to be a big obsession with this one particular 11-mile corridor. Now, we're well aware of what it means in our entire network. But again, I come back to, how on earth would this same option again and again of just adding lanes? See, when you hear this is within the existing right-of-way or footprint, it's negating or failing to mention that it still doubles the volume, that it's still adding more and more cars onto this roadway, again impacting all the same poor outcomes that we've seen. This is an addiction that has to stop, but it can, and we've never been better positioned to be able to tackle this. So this is the moment where we say to our MPO, recognize who put you in power and elected you. And that a lot of you ran on a transportation vision that matches what the people want and back them. Like, this is where we draw this and say, moving forward, yes, this is how we partner and this is how we get here. We can't continue to propagate myths that have been used to prop up highway widening, and we can't continue to make that be our first choice. It has to be a later priority.
Who's on the MPO board? How many people are on it? And in general, who makes it up?
There are 5 members of the Hillsborough County Board of County Commissioners that are on there. There are 3 representatives from the city of Tampa as a municipality. The mayor of Temple Terrace is a representative of their municipality, as well as the mayor of Plant City. There's a school board representative. There's a representative from the Planning Commission. Who am I forgetting? You get the gist. It's a lot of people. Aviation and the port. So the port and the airport as well.
Sorry. All right. So getting back now to the Tampa Bay Partnership, and I'm pretty sure the Tampa Bay Partnership supported the tax that was on the ballot that passed.
They did. I just don't understand. You'd have to ask them actually for official comment. But I do find it rather alarming when I continue to hear this trend where an organization that says they support economic growth still only ever advocates for something that's what we've seen in the past and we know is failing. It's not going to produce the outcome we need. By all means, I'd love to see them get behind pushing for the plan that David mentioned earlier so we can accelerate the purchase of CSX lines and we can build a regional commuter rail network. I'm hearing that this 11-mile stretch is so imperative to regional commuting. Why don't we provide some other means for, when we look at the regional picture, some other means that will more efficiently move even more people than single occupancy vehicle travel and not have it always be this either or construct. We've always been about and this system and that system and that one. Right now, it's the same squaring off and saying, too bad, so sad. Here's the winners, here's the losers. And it doesn't need to be that way.
And I don't want to give the wrong impression. David Gwynn from the Florida Department of Transportation, he was answering a question, and I gave the hypothetical of, let's say that the county wanted to purchase the CSX tracks, and he said that, yes, that would be a type of project in which the Florida Department would partner.
They will, and that could happen. But you're asking me about the partnership, and I would invite them to put their energy behind that. And if they want to pay for surveys, maybe they could construct something that leads some insight into how many people, and more than 400, think that that's a really viable and good investment of transportation funding.
Well, I want to move on from the Tampa Bay Partnership in just a second. I do have one last thing. I don't know why that's come up so much today, but they did have an op-ed in today's Tampa Bay Times, and the president and the CEO of the Tampa Bay Partnership Partnership, Rick Homan, said about opponents of the I-275 widening project. This is a quote. He said, "They won't be satisfied until I-275 north of downtown Tampa is torn down. Any investment in our interstate system has ended, and our transit system is fully funded." And I thought, well, since I have a critic of that on my show, I should ask if that's true. Does he have that correct? Is he's saying that you want an end to any investment in our interstate system?
That's patently false. You know, no one in my organization and all of our coalition of groups, by the way, it's not just the one, opposed Project Segment 4 that I heard Mr. Gwynn speaking about earlier with the West Shore Interchange. You know, we looked at it, and people in that area, especially with their alliance, were just adamant that they wanted that project, and we stepped aside. So that's false. You know, secondly, we're comprised of the grassroots. We are everyday citizens who care deeply about where we live. We are from all parts of the Tampa Bay area, and we're not paid to do anything that we're doing. You know, we don't have to throw $50,000 at it to try and approach this topic from a top-down and forceful manner of telling the people they don't know what they want and desire. We're all about raising this up from the grassroots, and that's what this effort has represented. In a lot of ways, like I said earlier, we've already won, and we are trying to close this out. We are saying, and it's a simple message, like, we've got to stop this same perpetuating widening of highways and inducing demand and expect to arrive at any other result where people aren't surprised, hey, it's clogged up again. And let's have that real big city conversation about comprehensive transportation that positions us for the future and isn't just a reaction and a reaction and a reaction that keeps putting more harm in place. Our new mayor in the city of Tampa really needs to get out in front of this and come back to what she said while she was running for office. The city stands to lose the most in these same schemes that keep costing us the most, devaluing our land, harming the people who live here. That cycle will perpetuate to other areas. This is bigger than the frame I hear being tossed at us about this is only about the urban core, or just a few neighborhoods. It's a pattern that's really toxic and destructive. We have the means to change it right now. We're at that moment. We need to turn that corner and pursue that better future that we need.
Our guest is Michelle Cookson with Sunshine Citizens. I've got such a backup of phone calls and emails that I am going to go to read a couple of emails, then go to the phones. And if you'd like to join us, 813-239-9663. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa, 12:52 in the afternoon. And Atik writes, good afternoon. Good afternoon. I appreciate Secretary Gwynn's vision for Tampa. It's encouraging that he's looking at solving congestion holistically and looking at combining solutions, as he said, and not or. Thank you for having him on your show. So I appreciate that that email that came in from Atik. And this person writes in David in Dunedin writes, where are the light rail, the monorails, the hybrid vehicles, the electric vehicles, the biodiesel vehicles, the autonomous drone passenger vehicles, the consideration of wildlands? So that's a question that was written in from Dunedin. So thanks for that. Let's take a phone call right now. Who's been holding the longest? It looks like Chris in Tampa, you've been holding for a while. Hi, Chris. What would you like to say?
Hi, guys. Hi, Michelle. Hi, Sean. This is Chris calling from Tampa. I'm with Sunshine Citizens. I'm a co-founder and also president of Historic Ybor. I just wanted to basically say that for the past 60 years, my neighborhood, I live next to the interchange. I'm right in that ground zero point where everything converges. Over the past 20 years, we have seen incremental improvements that have occurred. These are operational improvements, so they have involved widening, reconstruction, getting closer to the houses, and damaging the quality of life of people who live there. And so that's been a problem that we've been dealing with, and we noticed that has been a trend with FDOT.
Okay, well, thank you for that. He didn't want a question. So do you want to respond to that, or do you want to go on to a different
call? I just think it's really important that people remember that in the big picture, because like I said, this pattern will continue. And that, you know, the phrase NIMBY, where people say, you know, that they accuse people of being a not my backyard kind of person, just remember that, you know, NIMBY can also stand for next it might be you.
Here's an email from Ron in Tampa. It says, great guest today. Michelle makes fantastic sense on this transportation issue. I support her intent. We cannot and must not add lanes thinking this is the answer. Multimodal transit is the best option moving forward. Kudos to Michelle. That's from Ron in Tampa. Matthew in Tampa. You're on the line. Hi, Matthew.
Hi, how's it going?
Great.
Hey, I just wanted to go back to the Tampa Bay Partnership and their statements in relation to the project and pitting themselves against the community. And I think we have to look at Tampa and the larger picture in relation to the business and civic elite forces that act within the community. And there's a great book called Politics and Growth of the 20th Century in Tampa by Robert Kirsten, and he analyzes this dynamic throughout Tampa's history when it comes to how decisions are made within the greater, historically within the greater Tampa area. And a lot of what he says identifies that, you know, there hasn't been a presence from neighborhood groups and such that have a vocal stance. And I think that we have that now. And I think that that is currently biting at the heels of, you know, this elite kind of group that has always hung around here. And so I think that the community is doing a great job. I think, you know, we've got to put this into perspective. Also, you know, there are quite a lot of parallels in relation to the current disagreement between the business and civic kind of elites and the citizens that goes back to stories, historical record of Robert Moses and who was the great or infamous public works guru in the New York metropolitan area. And he battled the community, and behind him he had the contractors, he had the business elite, he had all of those people. And at the end of the day, he could care less about the community. So I think the community just needs to stay strong and come out tomorrow at 6 o'clock to the county center and let the MPO know about the thoughts in relation to transportation.
All right. Thank you so much, Matthew, for that perspective. We're going to go back to the phones and we're going to take a call from Connie in Tampa. Hi, Connie. What would you like to say?
I would just 100% support what your guest has laid out, that we're not going to be able to add lanes to continue to solve this problem. I could tell you from my perspective of just watching whole African neighborhoods be destroyed, people being displaced. Now with the closing of, say, 40th Street, 34th Street, the African community has been left as an economic desert. Not being able to participate in any economic flow of this heavy demand of people utilizing the interstate. And so I would say 400 people definitely do not represent the entirety of this community. And we have to find a way that as cities go to popularize themselves, being the number one speed through to making sure that a small minority of people get to where they need to go, that the majority of the people that live here have to be taken in consideration, that we don't want the land devalued, nor do we want to see a mass displacement of people that's already living in the urban core. And so that needs to be taken in consideration along with, as she laid out, the condition of roads and interstates and just major, minor work that could be done, and a better transit system that will help people get out of their cars and have to be part of the human society as opposed to just a few being pleasure for convenience and everybody else being displaced. Thank you.
Connie, thanks so much for your call. I really appreciate that perspective. Thanks so much for calling in. And I want to read an email here that came in from someone who could not get through on the phone, she says. Hillsborough County Commissioner Pat Kemp says the partnership has been pushing hard for what they're calling regional BRT, but what it really is a regional parking garage plan to fund 9,000 parking garage spaces, mostly in the city of Tampa. That's $430 million on parking garages out of the $455 million. No transit tax dollars should be spent on that. And that's Hillsborough Delaware County Commissioner Pat Kemp, and she talked about that on our show a few weeks ago. If you'd like to look online at WMNF.org to find out more about what she's talking about there, about the what they're calling the BRT plan that a lot of people are criticizing. Well, we're wrapping up, Michelle. Uh-huh. This went so quickly, but I do want to get back. Earlier in the show, somebody had a question about the Boulevard Tampa. Wouldn't there be bottlenecks if the Boulevard Tampa plan was in place? Can you answer that in 30 seconds or so?
I'll do my best. The Boulevard project is very transformative and game-changing, but one of the largest, most important elements about it is it is got to have some component that's mass capacity, mass transit. So another thing I keep hearing is tearing down. We're looking at these 11 miles that the Boulevard project represents as a stretch of highway that is very dated now and at the end of its life cycle. If we're going to continue to spend billions of dollars on this, we see better investment coming out of a project like that. But so the public understands it's still being studied. It is not in either these things we're talking about Tuesday night or that. So hopefully we can get everybody to come out to the county Center, 601 East Kennedy, tomorrow night at 6 p.m.
Well, thanks so much for joining us today on WMNF's Midpoint Monday, Michelle.
Thank you.
Michelle Cookson is with Sunshine Citizens. I want to thank everyone who called, emailed, and texted. I want to thank Alvaro Montealegre, Blanny Whelan, and Frank Knox for their engineering help. Stay tuned right now for Franco Silva. He is back with the return of Latino 54. I'm so excited. Tomorrow at noon, your hero, Mark Bureau, will host Midpoint Tuesday. I'm Sean Canaan. Coming up after NPR headlines is Latino 54 on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarah.